We left off yesterday at the top of Chaf Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing, or really the statement of Shmuel, which is the key factor here, which is that something that is going to be taken is not ma'et. For instance, a rakik enu ma'et b'chalon. That when it comes to tumah or a window of some sort that allows tumah to pass through, then if you have an object that's sitting there, the object will only be meaningful in terms of halacha chatzitza if the object will remain there and the object will not be taken. So the Gemara has been challenging the position of Shmuel from different places. And then we left off with yesterday was that they were talking about a case where they had left dried figs and a basket full of tevin in the window. And then we spoke about the fact that they had rotted and they were no longer usable, and therefore they were going to remain inside of the window. If they're going to remain inside of the window, number one, he's mevatel them, and number two, is they're not mekabel tumah. So for those reasons, those items were considered to have been mema'it, to reduce the window size and be a chatzitza, to not allow tumah to go through. The last question that the Gemara dealt with was the actual kli cheres, or the actual object that is holding the item. How come that is not chotzeitz? So we said one of two reasons. If it's a kli cheres, if it's an earthenware vessel, we said that the earthenware vessel was open towards the side of the tumah, and therefore it was mekabel tumah, and that's why it's not meaningful. Or the other possibility was that it was a object or vessel, utensil, that was metal, which can be mekabel tumah, both from its inside and its outside. If it's mekabel tumah, as we said before, that does not help in terms of chatzitza, doesn't allow it to be a chatzitza. Just only because it was mentioned after Shivas, when Farmer mentioned the Rabbeinu Tam asks, what's the question over here in terms of the metal? If you have a metal kli, we have a principle in Tumah by Parah Dumah that's mentioned in Parshat Chukat, which is Chalal Harehu Harehu Chichlal. That when it comes to metal, metal does not, like other Tumot, where Tumah, any touching or coming into contact with Tumah drops a level. When it's passed from person to person, passed from object to object, the Tumah drops a level. That's not true by metal. Metal takes on the properties of the Tumah that it touches. So for instance, if metal, the case in the Torah is Cherev Harayuhu Kechlal. Chlal is a dead body, right? A corpse. A corpse is a Avi Avota Tumah. And metal that comes in contact with the body becomes also is an Avi Avota Tumah. That it doesn't drop a level to an Avi Tumah, but remains a Avi Avota Tumah. But here, you have a case of Ohel. You have a case of Ohel. And if it's a Matechet, then the metal, that's sitting there, the kli that's sitting there, should be harehu chichlal, and it should become an avi avota tumah. If it's an avi avota tumah, right, then it's sitting in the window here. It should be able to bring the tumah through the other side because it's right. It's as if it's a mace sitting in the window, and it's an ohel over a mace, and that should bring the tumah. Forget about a window. You now have a mace sitting in that space between the two objects. So the answer to the question is, what you had asked yesterday, is that the fact that the Rabbeinu Tam says that the kli itself here is not visible to the outside or not extended to the outside. Why? Because there are figs in the kli. Why are there figs? Why are we talking about dry figs? How do dry figs stay together? They're caked together. When they're caked together, they could stick and they surround the entire kli. And since they surround the entire kli, the kli is not exposed, right, to the tumar, the tumata ohel, because it's surrounded by figs. That's Rabbeinu Tam's solution. Right, the other solutions to that problem are that the kli is found entirely within the windowsill. I mean, it doesn't extend beyond the windowsill, and therefore it would not be mikabel tumah from the tumata ohel. Right, those are the possibilities, just because we discussed it at the end of the shir yesterday. Now, the Gemara says,
Meitevei. Now, hold on a second. The figs themselves are coming in contact with the chalal.
Right, but that's not a problem because they are not tumata meit. The only thing that comes, I mean, it'll make a difference if they're tumata meit that they won't allow for chatzitza, but they won't create their own ohel. Okay? So meitevei is four lines down on chafam and aleph. Asavim shetel sham. If you take some sort of weeds or grass that he pulls out, ve'nicham b'chalon, and then he places them in the window. Osha alume alehem b'chalon, that they grew on themselves, b'chalonot. Umat nuyot, or we're talking about old, worn down bigadim, she'em behen shalosha shalosh, they don't have 3x3, it's boat. Va'iver, ve'abasar mudul dalim, right, a limb or flesh that is hanging off, but behema chaya of, sheshachin b'chalon, that is resting, the animal's resting in the window, or the aver that is hanging off is what resting in the window, but ovid kol chavim sheyoshev b'chalon, or the non-Jew is placed himself in that window. Uben shmona amunach b'chalon, or an 8-month-old baby who was born in his 8th month, that's placed in the chalon. Ba'melach salt, ukli cheres, or earthenware vessels, v'sefer Torah, kulam mema'atim b'chalon. They all reduce the size of the window. Obviously, we're going to have to go through each one of these and discuss how this works with the din of Shmuel. Aval, but it comes to a sheleg, v'abarad, v'aglid, v'akfor. So sheleg would be snow, barad would be hail, right? Glid would be ice, kfor would be frost, v'amayim, and water, kulam, ein mema'atim b'chalon. All of them do not reduce the size of the chalon, because they obviously will not remain here. They will melt, and they will go away. They will no longer be a chatzitza over a period of time. V'ha. Now the Gemara is going to go through the Braisa now and asks, based on this, right? V'ha asavim chazul debemto. What about the asavim? The asavim, the weeds or the grass, the hay that's being placed there, right, is good for his animal to eat. If it's good for his animal to eat, what is he going to do with it? He's going to take it away. If he takes it away, Shmuel's din says that's not a chatzitza. Yet the Braisa says it is a chatzitza. So what's the answer? Bifrasto. Right? This is a type of weed or growth that is poisonous for animals, right? That it's not, I think the Gemara in other places says that humans can consume it, but animals cannot, but it's poisonous for animals. So it's poisonous for animals. Obviously, he's not going to take it out of there. He's not going to feed it to his behemoth. So now the next case in the Braisa was, O shalu me'lehen, that they grew by themselves. Wait, kevan de kashu de kotel, shakiluhu. Now, when we just learned in our Mishnah, what is the case when something grows adjacent to a wall? When you have a growth that is adjacent to the wall, it weakens the wall. If it weakens the wall, no one's going to leave asavim right by the wall, within 3 tefachim of the wall. So he's going to take them out. He's not going to leave them there.
That's the problem with the Ivy League.
Right. And the other possibility here is that it's actually growing in the wall itself. It's growing out of the wall, like you have in patios and walls where grass grows out of them. I think the more likely scenario is that it's going right outside the window and going into the window. This might be, it's not so clear, the connection to our Mishnah and why this whole sugi is found here. Right. Amar Rabba, Bakoto Churva. We're talking about a case of a uninhabitable house, something that's been destroyed, so therefore the grass that's growing there, nobody's going to take it out because they're not worried about the integrity of such a wall.
We carry
Batuma
there.
Right. Well, you will if there's a, right, if you're on one side and there's a mate on the other side. Rapapa Amar, Afilu Bekotel Yishuv. Even in a wall of a habitable place, meaning within the residential neighborhood, we can solve that problem. The grass is growing outside, more than 3 tefachim away from the wall, and then it's leaning over into the window. Right? So when it's more than 3 tefachim away, it doesn't present for us a problem of deteriorating the structure of the wall. Nevertheless, when it leans over into the window, there's no reason to move it, and therefore it will diminish the size of the window in order to protect against tuma from going there. So where it says matloniot, when we're talking about these rags, right? Then chazulei lekriya delavusha, they're good for patching up clothing. I mean, you can use these pieces of torn clothing or torn cloth to mend other clothing. If that's the case, then one is going to take it out from there. They're not going to allow it to stay there. So it says it's bismichata, that they are very thick. It's a thick beged or thick piece which will not serve as a patch. Can you imagine, you know, if you patch a piece of clothing with a thick piece of cloth, it's gonna look a little funny or feel funny. So Gemara says, wait a minute, chazal umna can be used by a bloodletter. Now what it's being used for by a bloodletter, according to Rashi, it's to wipe the wound itself. In that when the bloodletter goes in, and basically a band-aid, the equivalent of a band-aid, so that when he takes out the bloodletting utensil, he has to cover it, hold something on it. So he would use these pieces of cloth. So that would be good for him. Or the Rabbeinu Gershom seems to be saying that it's to wipe off the end of the needle, meaning the end of the bloodletting utensil, and to wipe the end of that off when he's finished so he can clean it. So either way, this bloodletter could use it. Where it says, no, it's a case where it's beriska. And beriska is a, we call it a hardened material, something like a sack is made out of, that something that is abrasive, And therefore, according to Rashi, it's not useful because you're not going to wipe someone's wound, right? Put on a band-aid, it's abrasive. And according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's going to cause the utensil, if you use an abrasive to wipe off the blood from the utensil, it'll cause it to rust or deteriorate, so you're not going to use it there. Where it says, Iberiska, if you're talking about Iberiska, Shein ba shalosh o shalosh, then why is the qualification or the determination of the size here 3x3 etzbaot? Shein behen, arba al arba mi ba'ile, it should be 4x4 tefachim. Meaning the Mishnayot lay out what are the minimum standards or minimum sizes of different types of materials in order to be mekabel tuma. So the minimum standard when we talk about clothing or beged is 3x3. Shalosh shalosh etzbaot. In order to be mekabel tuma, the item must be at least 3x3 etzbaot because that is still a useful item. It's useful to patch up. By a sack, right, by riskita, the basic or the minimal amount that it is mekabel tuma is 4x4 tefachim. So why is the Mishnah mentioning anything about shalosh or shalosh, which isn't relevant to sackcloth? So Mara says, no, no problem. Ke'ein riska, right, that's it. We're not talking about that it is riska, that if it is a riska, if it is sackcloth, or then it is a 4x4 or defined by 4x4, but we're talking about here a regular beged, but that beged has properties or characteristics like a riska, like a sack. So if that's the case, you have a beged that is thick and abrasive, so therefore it's not useful, but it's not useful, right? Then the person's going to be mevatel it there, and now this will not be a question for Shmuel. Again, we're trying to come up, we're trying to ensure that for Shmuel over here, that there's no item that you're going to take away, that the items that are using or being used as chatzitzot here are items that are going to remain there. So now the only question, and Tosfos raises the question also, which is that if the minimum standard of a beged, or what's classified as a beged, is shalosh al shalosh, why is that the case? The answer is that it's ra'ui l'anim. Even though it's not ra'ui l'yashirim, it's ra'ui l'anim for poor people who use it to patch up their clothing. And that means, what's the minimum size of a patch? Shalosh, a shalosh etzvot. Because that's the definition of what a beged is. So how come here over the Gemara says, oh, this is a piece of cloth that's less than shalosh shalosh, and he's going to use it, what's he going to use it for? What's it going to be useful for? For patching up a piece of clothing. So it almost undermines the whole principle that shalosh shalosh is the minimum amount, because that is what a person would use as a patch. Well, it's what's used for a patch. It's not shalosh shalosh is the amount that one would use for a patch. Not that people patch that amount, but that is the size of a minimum patch. And here the Gemara is suggesting that below shalosh shalosh, the person will take it out of the windowsill because he's going to use it as a patch to patch up another piece of clothing. So how could that be? So he says, Tosa says, that when it comes to being mekabel tuma, then you need a minimum of shalosh shalosh, because that someone puts away. Someone will take that and keep that and store such an item because it's considered useful or meaningful to that individual. But when it comes to less than shalosh shalosh, even though they wouldn't necessarily be right matzniyayit, they wouldn't keep it particularly for a patch, but that doesn't mean that they would be mevatel it. Doesn't mean that they would leave it there and not use it at all. If they found some use for it, they would use it. But not that it's something that people in general would not take this or have in mind to keep this. That's why it's lost its shame beged or shame tum'ah. On the other hand, it still has utility. And if it has utility, fine, they wouldn't put it away because it's too small. But they would use it if it had utility. And that's the way Tosfos tries to differentiate over here.
I think one of those things is better than the answer.
I would agree. Right. So now we have a case where you have a limb or flesh that is hanging off an animal that I almost severed aver over here. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, why is that mevutal, or why is that make a chatzitza here? According to Shmuel, there's a problem. Why arkav asla? What's the animal going to do? He's going to pick up and leave. And animals don't stay still, they leave. If they're going to leave, that so is that aver, so is that basar. It's going to leave with him. Where it says, Bikshura, so that it's tied up. The animal's tied up there, so it's not going anywhere fast. The Mar says, okay, he's going to shachitla. He's going to shech the animal to eat it. Meaning, why are you assuming that when he ties up the animal, it's going to be there permanently as a permanent fixture? Right? He's going to shech the animal, he's going to eat it. That's what people do with animals. So Mar says, Vitzmeya, it's a non-kosher animal. It's a non-kosher animal, he has no right value or incentive to shech the animal over here. So Mar says, what do you mean? He's better off shechting the animal than letting it die, because mezavin lo benochri, he can sell it as flesh, he can sell it as meat to a non-Jew. Sure, it's not kosher meat, but it still has value, and he can sell it. So why would he leave it hanging out there? Where it says bichusha, it's an animal that's weak, that nobody wants the meat. It's no longer good for its meat, Because kusha, when it's weak, people avoid eating such animals, eating such meat, because it's considered to be a poor quality. So there, even whether it was tamei Torah, nobody's going to eat it because it's a weak animal. So it says, pasuk shadi lo de klavim. What do you mean? Just pop off the aver and hand it over to, right, one of dogs. I mean that there are dogs to feed, take it off, and you can throw it over to the dogs. Where it says, kevin de'ika tsar balei chayim lo avid. No, that is painful for the animal. The limb or the basar are still attached, and to sever them from the animal would be classified as tzar balei chayim, and we wouldn't do tzar balei chayim, just throw it off to a dog. In that, we wouldn't go through that extent or hurt the other animal in order to feed a dog over here. The question that bothered me when I read this is, well, if it's chusha and it's tmeya, why not just shech the animal and feed it to the dogs? I mean, chusha is something where you wouldn't feed it to a right human being, but who says you wouldn't feed it to a dog? So why doesn't the Gemara suggest over here, even when it's chusha, let him shech the whole animal? If he shechs the whole animal, then he can just hand it to the dogs. They won't stay there. Why did the Gemara only move to the next stage where it says pasik? He'll take off that aver and then give it to the dogs. What about shechting the whole animal and giving it to the dogs? So Tosfos suggests over here that it's a type of animal that you would not do that to, because there's some other value to the animal. So that's Tosfos says that maybe it's something like a kof. It's a monkey, right, or an ape that's hanging out there. You'd leave him there in order to play around with them and have fun with them. I mean, their entertainment value is worth more than shechting them and giving it to a dog. So therefore, the Gemara suggests maybe you would pop off the aver and give it to the dog, but you wouldn't destroy or kill the whole animal to give it to the dogs, because being alive, it has more value than being dead. Now, if you're talking about feeding it to a human being, then you could talk about value that's in excess of the entertainment value. But feeding it to the dogs or dog food, that's not in excess of the entertainment value, and therefore the person would not shech the entire animal. So next case was oaf.
I don't understand. Why would you kill an animal to feed it to the dogs? You give the veils to the dogs. If you kill it, you eat it for regular, you give it to the dogs. Sometimes you go kill it for dog food.
Well, it's dying. It's chusha. It's a weak animal. It's not going to, it sounds like it's not going to make it for much longer. So you may as well just shech it while it's still good and give it to the dogs.
It's not very good meat, right?
Right. So I thought that would be the answer, that the quality of meat, the chusha, is so degraded that even for dogs it's not good. But I don't know. As Alan is suggesting, dogs eat anything. They eat nevelot, right?
It sounds like what Alan was saying. It could be another answer to the question. Some people would not do that.
That assumes that there is some sort of alternative value. I mean, if the animal has no value, and you're not going to just hang it out, wait for it to die to feed it to the dogs, you check, you kill it, and give it to the dogs. Very good. So, a number of answers besides the answer of Tosfos. So, thank you. Those are all good answers to why the Gemara didn't go in that direction. Right, what about oaf? The oaf is hanging out in the window. So, Gemara says, parach vazil. When birds don't hang out, they leave. And it's going to fly away. It says, of course, because sure, it's tied down. It's now shachit le, it's going to shecht it and eat it. So again, the answer is be'ta me, it's a tame bird. So mizavin le the nochre, you can sell it for food to a non-Jew. It says, when it says, bekalnita. So this kalnita is a very thin or small bird that has no flesh to it, so there is no value in terms of its meat. So nobody would sell it for its meat, because there isn't enough meat to make it worthwhile. So he says, where it says, you have a lady yanoka. These kalnitas are, good toys for the children. And we had these types in the Gemaras and other places with the grasshoppers, right? Whether we only give taller grasshoppers or even tamei grasshoppers to children to play with. But the idea that it's part of, entertainment for children or toys for children in those days were animals or birds and grasshoppers. So here, why not give it to a child? So where it says, b'misaret, where it scratches. You're not going to give it to him because it's a little dangerous or not a good toy for the child because it will scratch the child. And it says, klanita lo misarta. What are you talking about? The klanita doesn't scratch. It doesn't have sharp nails. It doesn't peck with its beak, whatever the reason is, but it's not something that damages in general. Where it says, no, like we said before, in klanita, that here it's not a klanita where it's literally a klanita, but it's a bird like the klanita where there's not a lot of meat on it, right? And it's tied down, and therefore there's no value besides leaving it there to chirp on your windowsill, and therefore it's going to be a chatzitza. So again, not a problem for Shmuel now, because it's not something going to be taken away. Non-Jew sits in the window, of course. Right? Where it says, he's going to pick up and leave. I mean, what's the story here? How could you classify this as a chatzitza? Where it says, no problem, bikafut, that he's tied down. He's tied down, he's not going anywhere. So it says, atachavre, and shoridle. Just because he's tied down doesn't mean that he's staying there. Someone else will come and untie him. He'll leave. I mean, his friend will come and release him. So where it says, b'mitzora. He's a mitzora, so no one else is going to want to come near him. Since he's a leper, nobody's going to come near him, and he's going to be left there all tied up. Where it says, ata mitzora chavre. Shoridle, wait a minute. You could have someone else who's a mitzora who won't be fearful of coming into contact with him and release him. Ela b'chavushe malchut. It's a case where he's incarcerated in that location. It's interesting incarceration, but he's tied up in the window and by the din of the malchus, so nobody's going to come and release him because that will get them into trouble. It'll be a prison break and nobody's going to let him out of that situation.
Yeah, Yehuda says he's even not allowed to be buried in the malchus when he dies, so he'll be there forever and ever.
And ever. Oh, that's part of the punishment, that he's not even entitled to a proper burial. Right. It's now Uben Shmonah Amunach B'Chalon. Now Ben Shmonah, in terms of the Gemara, it's not true of the din today. We don't look at it this way today. But the Gemara believed that only a 7-month-old baby or a 9-month-old baby was a bar chai or a ben chai that would live or survive. A baby that was born in the 8th month was considered to be a nefel, considered to be a baby that had no, would not succeed at living or would not succeed in lasting very long. And therefore, the Ben Shmonah has a din, and the Gemara in Shabbos says ke'eben, like a stone. He's equivalent of a stone, which means that he's lo chai, he's not considered to be alive, velo meit, he's not considered to be dead, he's considered to be an inanimate object. An inanimate object and an evan on Shabbos makes him muksa. So actually on Shabbos you can't move such a baby because they're a muksa. Right, so now the Gemara says, Uben Shmonah Munach B'Chalon Achi Ime and Daryale. His mother's going to come and take him away. Because, I mean, his mother still cares about this Ben Shmonah who supposedly is not going to live. The Gemara says, B'Shabbos. It's time in the case of Shabbos. If it's Shabbos, then it's Muksa, and the mother can't come and pick up the baby. Zatanya, Ben Shmonah, Harihu Ke'evin. Comes to Shabbos, right? A Ben Shmonah is a din of an Evin, meaning it's Muksa, Vasar L'Taltalo. So therefore, one cannot carry it or move it around. B'Shabbat, Avalimo. But when it comes to his mother, when it comes to nursing the baby to help it survive, nevertheless, Shokha Alav, she can bend over him, right? And Umanikato, Mipnei Sakana. She can feed him because of the sakana, because of any danger. Obviously here, the Gemara believes it's some value or some life value to this Ben Shmonah. So she's permitted to now bend over the baby and to feed the baby or to nurse the baby without moving the baby. She can't pick up the baby because the baby is a din of mukso, but she can nurse the baby that's over there. So that's what the Gemara says in the end. That's the case here. Why is the baby not going to be movable? Because it's the case of Shabbos. In case of Shabbos, where the baby is muksa, since it's muksa, the mother's not permitted to move it. Even though she's permitted to nurse it, she's not permitted to move it. Had it not been Shabbos, we would have been suspect that she would move the baby because there's no restriction against her moving the baby or nursing such a baby.
The Meiri here says the sakana is
to the one mother, right? I was going to say that.
Ketosis and the Sefer Shabbos also say that.
Right. I was going to just say that the possibility of sakana is not to the baby, but rather to the mother from withholding the nursing. She'll become engorged. And so because of that, we allow the baby to nurse in order to prevent sick damage to the mother.
We're limiting this case to Shabbos. I mean, previously, it seems like when we're concerned with something like an abandonment, the impression not that it's going to be there for a day. It's going to be there, it's going to be abandoned, and it's going to be there forever. Like you said, that the it's a college, you know, focus that he's in prison. But here, okay, so Shabbos.
Shabbos
ends.
None of
us going to take the baby away.
Right. It's a good question. The only thing I could say is maybe that the idea that this baby is not going to survive that long, that the Chazal believe that Ben Shmonah is not doesn't have a very long life. Go see Shemot. Kodem Shiyatzei Shabbos. Amar Shem Tehei Gvurato. That she'll abandon him at that point in time and leave him there. That's exactly what you were saying.
No worse than an animal. You got to keep feeding the animal. It's your animal.
Right.
Shabbos,
right. But then you can't move it. Doesn't mean you can move it. The difference between, I mean, an animal that's tied up, also you have to feed, but doesn't mean that it's going to move. I mean, our idea is that it's mavuto. That's not going to move from there. To be a chatzitza, it can't move. Just because you have to feed it doesn't mean it moves. That's right. That's exactly what the suggestion is. All right, now, the Gemara says, what about melach? What about salt? Chazile. You could use salt for your cooking, for your food. Why would you leave salt over there? Where it says, mimirta, it's inedible salt, it's bitter salt, something that would not be. Where it says, chazilorot, you could use it for tanning. I mean, that salt is still good, even though you can't, it's not edible, it has other functions. Where it says, didbakotze, it has thorns in it, right? This is an interesting type of salt that has thorns in it. Right, the thorns in there make it impossible to use because the person who's working with the tanning, the orot, right, won't stick his hands in and get them ripped up, so you don't put it into the solution. So kevin dekash the kotel shakla. Wait a minute, salt is not good. We saw that in our Mishnah, so this might be the other connection to our Mishnah, that we saw that when you place salt, you're not allowed to place salt adjacent to a wall because the salt deteriorates the wall. So Mary here says also, the salt is going to deteriorate the wall. It's going to cause deterioration to the wall. Nobody's going to leave salt in that location. It says the atva chaspo, it's sitting on a kli cheres, it's sitting on some shard, earthenware shard. Mary says, wait, earthenware shard, chaspo gufo tichotz. What do you mean? Why are you just worried about the salt? Then if it's sitting on a shard, an earthenware shard, then it must, why don't you suggest that that is also a part of it? So Mary says, the late bay shiura, that doesn't have a shiur. And Rashi says, when it says late bay shiura, he says, v'havi kaman galeta, as if it's not there. So since it's that, when Rashi says, oh, because this is not a big enough kli cheres to be classified as a kli, not a big enough kli cheres to be mekabel tuma, it's as if it's not there. I don't think I would have stepped that far. Oh, the less bei shiura just means that it's so small, it's irrelevant, right? Or it's not, and that's what Tosfos suggests over here. The less bei shiura is that it doesn't, the chaspa doesn't have a shiur. It's less than a potach tefach. And then the melach, or the significance of the melach, is what's going to block here because, if you believe that the kli cheres was big enough to be useful, what's going to happen? The person's going to come and take the kli cheres away. Then where's the salt going to be sitting? It's going to be sitting right on the windowsill. If it's sitting on the windowsill, that will deteriorate the window and he's going to take the salt away. So it must be, or what Tosfos is suggesting over here, lepe shiura, is that it's not useful, it's not functional in terms of its shiur, and therefore it'll be left there. The chaspa won't move, and if the chaspa won't move, then the salt will stay there as well. So the idea of lepe shiura is not that an inyan in tuma, it's an inyan in, right? It's not as if it's not there, it's as if it will stay there because the person will never take such an item. Or lepe shiura is that it's just not meaningful. If it's not meaningful, right, then it's not an issue to speak about when it comes to chayitz in terms of a chatzitza. Right? Uchaditnan. Right? We have a Mishnah. Cheres kedeli beim ben patsim lechaveiro. What's the minimum size of a cheres in order to be mekabel tum'ah? That is the amount to put between patsim lechaveiro. Now, what is this? Ben patsim lechaveiro. The Gemara in Shabbos, and Rabbeinu Gershom, I think over here, quotes the, it's used as a shimmy or a divider. For instance, if you ever seen construction being done, here in Israel, they don't use so much wood, but in places where they use a lot of wood or they stack planks on it, they don't stack them one on top of the other. Rather, they put a small divider between the layers of the wood in order that the air can get in. They won't warm, the moisture won't get in there. So they don't sit the wood directly on top of each other. There are these little pieces, they actually use wood, little pieces of wood that they stick to separate between the layers of wood. So that's what Ben Patsim the Chaveiro is, that the kli cheres to stick between layers of building material in order to separate between them. Rashi over here gives a different interpretation, which seems to be some sort of window, I would call them a shades or bars, right? The blinds of sorts that are sitting outside the window, and you use these kli cheres to hold them open. I mean, that since they're there to close the window and cut off, to keep light there, or to keep the air coming through, you put the kli cheres there. That's the peg that holds open the bars, the windows, the blinds, whatever it is that Rashi is describing over here. Either way, it's a very small piece of kli cheres, but until it reaches that size, it's not classified as having utility and not being mekabel tuma. So the case we're talking about over here is something that is less than that size. Right. Exactly. All right. Kli cheres, I mean, we're talking about a potech tefach. It's not such a large area, so it's not so far-fetched. Now, the Mish Brisa also mentioned kli cheres. A kli cheres can be ma'et. It says, chazila, you can take away a kli cheres. The mitanaf, mitnaf, it's dirty, it's disgusting. So my says, chazilumna, a bloodletter could still use such an item because he needs to collect the blood that he's letting out of the individual. He doesn't care if it's nimas, nobody's drinking that blood, right? So he can use the kli cheres to capture the blood. My says, the menukav, that it has a hole in it. It has a hole in it and it's not useful for collection. So my, if it's the next.
It has a hole in it, is it not considered a kli? And if there's a hole in it that's big enough that
right, well, the hole could be a different size, right? It depends. That's an issue in Kli Cheres. How big? That's Mishnayot Kelim. How big the hole must be in order to lose its shame tuma? Because you can store vegetables, even though you can't store liquids. But given what we said before in Tosfos, right? Right. But what we discussed before in Tosfos is that just because it's disqualified from being a kli for tumah doesn't mean that its utility has been lost entirely. It's something that people won't be matzniah, but it may have some utility. If that's the case, then that would be that in between state that this item is in it. Sefer Torah. What about a Sefer Torah? Chazal the mikra. Right. Someone's got a Sefer Torah sitting. They're going to read it. Right. It's ruined already. Right. It needs to be put into a gniza. Gemara says, "Baal by gniza." That's exactly what it needs. If it's going to go into gniza, what are you doing leaving it in the windowsill? Gemara says, "Sham tehei gnizata." That's exactly what it is. He's leaving it there to be in gniza. So now, Omer Rav, b'chol usim b'chitza chutz mimelach v'ravav. One can make a mechitza or a division with anything besides salt and fat. All right, salt and fat. Even with salt. So Amra Papa Velo Pig Lige. They don't argue. Habemelech stomit. Habemelech istroknit. All right, depends on what type of salt you're talking about over here. Certain salt is avert, thick and hard, like the melech stomit. And that will leave there because that has qualities like a binyan, like a building block, and therefore one would leave it there, and that is considered a chatzita. Whereas melech istrokunit is a thinner, usable salt that one would not necessarily leave there or be mevutal there. And therefore, therefore it's not considered a chatzita. Why it's not considered a chatzitza? Rashi suggests over here the melech, if it's a thin melech, not a thick melech, the wind will come and be mitpazer. It will get blown all over the place, and therefore it's not mevutal. And of course the fat will melt. If it gets hot or it heats up, there it will get melt. The Ben Gershom suggests that no, that the salt would not, it will dissolve. Not that it will be mitpazer, but it will dissolve. It's very thin salt, and if any water or moisture comes there, it will dissolve the salt, and the salt will not remain there. So therefore it's not classified as a chatzitza. Where it says, Hashudama Rabbo Usa Adam Shnei Tziburei Melach Omniachalem Korah. When it comes to the din in Erevin, right, Erevin, it says that a person can have two piles of salt, put a piece of wood on them, and that'll be the Korah and the Lechi for the Mavoi. So you see, you can use them as building blocks. So now that Rabbah says that about salt, then in our case over here, Shemelech, why? Shemelech Mamedet at the Korah. The salt holds up the beam that you're putting across. And the pressure from the beam on top of the salt keeps the integrity of the salt, that keeps the salt intact there. So then, a filo melech istroknit. That it goes to be that the Shmuel and Rav are talking about melech istroknit, velo pligyon, they're not arguing. Ha deika korah, deleka korah. Depends if there's a beam on top of it or not. If there's a beam on top of it, that will keep the salt intact. That keeps the salt intact, it can be a chatzitza. Whereas if there's no beam on top of it, then the salt is exposed, either according to Rashi, to the wind, or according to right, the Rabbeinu Gershom to moisture or liquid to be dissolved, and therefore it would not be considered or classified as a chatzitza over here.
Does the lechi in our Torah, does that last for that Shabbos? Does that be really permanent?
No, yeah, but it has to be something that stays, that's considered structural. Yeah.
Maybe just even for that Shabbos alone would be enough, no?
Right, yes, it would be enough for
so
that Shabbos.
Something with chatzitza even.
Well, that you need it to last for a very long time. Yeah, but the reason that Rabba gives for the fact that the Korah works here with the salt is because when the Korah is on top of the salt will not deteriorate. It's mamid. Right, right. So it has some duration to it. All right. Now, marchakim et erechayim gimel min ha-shachav, shein arba min ha-rechav. Right, so we said before by the mill that you have to distance it 4 from the top millstone and 3 from the base. Right, the base millstone. My time, huh? What's the reason by a mill that you have to do this? It says mishum tiria, because of the vibration. The vibration will deteriorate the wall, the structure that's near it. Where it says, v'atanya shvel shechamor, shlosha mina istrobil, shein arba mina kelet. Now what is shel chamor is? Rashi claims shel chamor, a mill of a chamor, is a mill that is driven by a donkey instead of a human being. Although it's strange, because Rashi then says that this mill is smaller than a human mill. Which I would expect that just the opposite, which is that a mill driven by a chamor would be bigger than a mill driven by a individual. Tosfos on the other hand says, and he quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel, that the Rabbeinu Chananel says that a shel chamor is something that is a nosea et arichayim. It is a base or a wooden base which actually the mill sits on. That's what it says, shel chamor. Shel chamor means it's a mill with a base to it, not just the two millstones, but actually a wooden base or wooden structure that holds it up. And he says also that it's a mill that is driven by one's foot. It's a foot mill, pedal mill, rather than a hand mill. On the other hand, right, the Rabbeinu Tam, or the Reis, suggests over here that even a mill chamshel chamor could also be done by a hand mill. He doesn't make that distinction. That's also a foot pedal, but just the idea that there's a base or structure under it. So now you have to leave it shloshim min ha'strobel and arba min ha'kelet. You have to leave it three away from the strobel, four away from the kelet. Now according to Rashi, these must be pieces of the mill that help the donkey be attached to the mill, the wooden piece and the brace for that wood piece that holds the donkey onto the mill. And according to Tosfos, these are parts of this wooden base, right, that the place and the structure on which the mill sits, that this is strobel and kelet, they're part of that. So you'd have to have it three or four away from that base. So I say, out to my interior eco. If the whole problem here is vibration, right, there is, Rashi claims by a mill of a chamor, there's no vibration because it's a smaller mill, which again seems strange. Tosfos says there's no vibration here because you have a base on which the mill sits and that absorbs all the vibration, so there's no vibration into the ground. So my eco, what's interior? Eloi mishum kala. There's a different issue, which is the noise. I mean, there's not only a problem of vibration, but there's also a problem of the noise that is generated by a mill. And that's still true even if a smaller mill or a mill that's sitting on a base, even though it doesn't create vibrations, it still creates noise, which are detrimental to, sounds like here, detrimental to the wall, or the, right, or the people on the other side of the wall as well. All right. So we said there is machlokis, and the Mishnah Rashi says that means from the base, which comes up on an angle, right? It's three away from the bottom of the base, four away from the top of the base. Rabbeinu Chananel said it was a pot-bellied oven. So the base is four away, whereas the belly is three away. So Rabbi Shmamina, Kali of the Tanur, Tefach, right? That the difference, or the Kali of the Tanur is one Tefach. I mean, the difference between the Kalia and the Safa is one Tefach. So Nafkamina, the Mekach Memkar, someone promises you a Kalia, it's a Tefach big, this Kalia. So whatever this base, which is, I don't know if it's the bottom of the base according to Rashi or the full base according to Rabbeinu Chananel. Right, next, Mishnah. Lo yamid adam tanur betoch habayit, en ken yishal al gabav, gova arba amot. So these are basically the ordinances, city ordinances. One may not place an oven in their house unless there's a clearance of four amot above it so that it doesn't light the house on fire. Right. If you're upstairs and you're putting it on the floorboards that are below me, that are your floor, the downstairs is ceiling, then you have to have plaster that is thick, at least 3 tefachim, so that it absorbs the heat and the fire, so it doesn't catch the floorboards or the roof of the downstairs, doesn't catch fire. When it comes to kira, you only need one tefach because the kira is not as hot as a tanur. A tanur gets much hotter, is much bigger, and therefore you need three tefachim. But by a kira, you only require, right, one tefach of thickness. What happens if in the end it does catch fire? I mean, below you left the four amot that is of the order of the city code, and you left three tefachim if you were upstairs, and nevertheless, it damaged, it caught fire, and the house was burnt down. You have to mishalim, asher hezik, and you have to pay for it. I mean, that these are ordinances that you have to keep in order to prevent damage to your neighbor, but that doesn't mean, right, that you're patur from nizakim. So Mar says, Rabbi Shimon Omer lo amru kol shirim ala elu eloshim hezik patur mishalim. Now, the whole point of doing this is that if you adhere to the ordinances, then you are no longer liable because you did what you were supposed to do. He's an onus at this point in time because he followed whatever the code was, and nevertheless there was a fire and it'd be classified as an onus in this case. So now the Gemara continues, the Mishnah continues. Lo yiftach adam chanut shel nachtamim shel tzva'im tachad utzero shel chaveiro. This is the, we quoted this Mishnah in our Gemara before. The person should not open up a bakery or a dyeing location under the storehouse of his friend. Velo refet bakar, not a cow shed. When it comes to wine, it's okay to put wine, to put a bakery or a dyeing place below because it's beneficial to the wine. So the only thing that a wine or otzer wine is restricted from is putting a refet bakar, a cow shed, because the malodorous smells that come from there will deteriorate or hurt the wine. The Rashi over says over here that the reason that wine is okay or to have these items below wine is because ashan kasher the ina ashan kasher liayin. Smoke is not bad for wine. Now Rashi on Daf Yudchet and Aleph, which we just did right 2 days ago, over there said, what's the problem of putting a bakery and a dying place below is because the ashan, the smoke, goes up and damages it. And over here, Rashi says explicitly that smoke doesn't damage wine. So that's why Tosfos over there on the Daf Yudchet disagreed with Rashi and says the problem is not the smoke, but rather the heat. Right? And then even the Rabbeinu Tam went as far to say that the heat's the problem, not even for the object stored there, but for the storage, right, place itself, that'll hurt the storage place. Right now the Gemara says, V'atan, you have a brace that says, V'tanur arba u'b'kirash l'sham. That for a tanur you need four tefachim, and by kirah we need three, as opposed to our mission which says three for a tanur and one for a kirah. The amount of mazivah, the thickness of the plaster that you need below. So, that's with professional. When you talk about professional equipment for a baker that gets very hot and is on all the time, then we talk about four and three tefachim. The tanur dinan, kikira denachtonim. Our tanur, which requires three tefachim, is the equivalent heat of a kirah, the smaller oven of a baker. I mean, that's the highest level of residential ovens are equal to the lower level of commercial ovens. So they both require three tefachim. Right? Lo yiftach chanut, tana. Imaita refet kodemet ozer mutar. So again, we quoted this earlier in the Gemara Yuchet, that if the cowshed was there first, then he has, right, he has an easement, he has a right already, and you can't remove him even if you want to put an otzer upstairs. If he starts cleaning up upstairs to make it usable as a storage house, then what's the story in terms of the individual now who brings in a refet bakar, brings in a cowshed? He sees his upstairs neighbor cleaning it out to use as an otzer. Is that enough an indication that he's there first? Or the fact that he didn't put anything in there yet means that it's not an otzer. Riva b'chalonot. He expanded the windows. He added windows in order for the airflow to be greater and to use as an otzer. Again, these are indications that he's going to use it as an otzer. Aksadra tach... What?
Otzar.
Aksadra tachar otzar. Mahu. What happens if you have a nachsadra down below, but underneath the otzar? What is the din over here? Meaning that, does that hurt? I mean, the items that are placed in there, stuff that's in there, does that hurt the otzar above? Because it has ventilation, a lot of ventilation. So now, banal liyal gabe beto. What happens if a person starts to build an upper level above his house where it's clear that he's going to make that into an otzar? That's what people do with their aliyot in general. Must be a case where he's renting out the house below or something to that effect and he's building above. Mahu, what's the din? The Gemara says, teika, we don't know if that's enough of an indication that the person who has the otzer is there first, or meaning that until you utilize it as an otzer, it's not classified as an otzer. That's the Gemara leaves as a teiku. By Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yeshua, Tamrei V'rimonei Mai. What's the story with storing? When you store dates and pomegranates up there, what's the din? So when it comes to yayin, shemen, tevuah, which are staple products, right? We have this also in the Gemara and Shabbos with regards to schita. Yayin and shemen have a din of schita. Right? Other juices, other fruits don't have a din of schita. Gemara wants to know, Tamrei V'rimonei, that's which is in between. They're similar to wine and shemen, but they're not exactly. So we, in a sense, goes there also. That's what Gemara and Shabbos is dealing with. Gemara and Brachos, are they classified as liquid or not? And over here, the Gemara wants to know that Rimona and Tamre, are they damaged by the heat or the ashan, the smoke below, or by the refet bakar? So Gemara doesn't know. Teiku. But when it comes to wine, they were matir. By wine, they let it be there because it actually benefits the wine. The smoke is actually good for the wine. The heat possibly is good for the wine. But when it comes to a cowshed, no, because it leaves a malodorous smell, which is detrimental to the wine. Amar Rav Yosef,
that's a bigger problem with old Rashi than the inconsistency in Rashi.
Right, right. The Gemara itself, right, seems to be, right. That's what Tosfos questions. The Gemara seems explicit about that. Right, Amar Rav Yosef, Haididan, Afilu Kutu Desharga, Nami Koshule. Our wine, even the smoke of a candle is bad for it. I mean, that maybe for their wine it was good. For our wine, smoke of a candle is bad for it, therefore you can't even do, right, you can't even put anything there. You can't even put candles on it. Amar Sheshit, Vasaftaza, Karefit Bakar Damya. One who stores hay or grass for animals, that is as bad as a refet bakar because they're moist and either havla, they give off heat, or that they deteriorate and they give off a malodorous smell, and because of that, they're just as bad as having a cow shed down below. Right? We'll do the Mishnah quickly and then we'll continue with the Gemara from the Mishnah. Chatzer. Chanut shebechatzer. If a person puts up a store in a courtyard, yacholim chot biyado, the owners or the other people who live in that courtyard can object, right? V'lomer lo einu yachol lishan. We call it nichnasim mekol yotzim. I can't sleep here. I can't live here. You have people coming in and out of our chatzer all the time. And that's not the purpose. The purpose of a chatzer is for personal use or private use. It's not for a. It's not a public thoroughfare. Avalu sekhilim yotze umocher betoch hashuk. On the other hand, if he's an artisan, he's a craftsman, he can work in the chatzer, do his work, and then take it out and sell it outside. He said, he can't, then he can't stop it. I can't sleep. From the hammer. and not from the male, velomi kola tikinokot, or from the children. Now the kola of the children over here sounds to be that the children are coming in to buy from his store. I mean, we don't allow adults in, but we allow children in, and that's going to be the first question of the Gemara. But what seems to be from the Mishnah so far is that when it comes to personal use, right, meaning that we allow you to use it for both personal, meaning residential use, or for your craft, because that's what the courtyard is available for, and in that you can't, the neighbors can't stop you from. But when it comes to opening up a store, opening it up to the public, that the neighbors can object to and say, sorry, you know, that wasn't the deal. This is private use, now you're letting all these people come in and out, that we can object to. Again, of course, the Gemara will deal with all this tomorrow.